This is Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, sponsored by St. Francis Hospital, Ratchford Eye Center, Hartford Healthcare, MD Advantage, and Yukon Health Orthopedic and Sports Medicine. Healthy Rounds provides general information regarding medical conditions and diseases. The information is not intended to create a doctor-patient relationship. You are encouraged to consult your own medical provider for advice that applies to your own medical care. And now, Dr. Anthony Alessi on WTIC, News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Welcome to Healthy Rounds, the show that provides you with up-to-date medical information, and we answer all of your health questions. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it's great to be with you live on this Saturday morning for what is our 101st consecutive program dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. And in this show, we're going to talk about a lot of the important news that we're hearing about, the new booster shot. Which way are we going? Is this going to be an annual problem? And how does this interrelate with flu that's coming up? We're starting to get ready to flu season. Are we going to see a lot more flu? Are we going to see a lot more COVID? And we're going to address those issues with my guest today, who will be Dr. Saeed Hussain. Many of you will know, if you're regular listeners, Dr. Hussain is the Chief Clinical Officer at Trinity Health of New England. And he has been a regional leader in this battle to help save lives from COVID-19. And he and his team at Trinity Health of New England and St. Francis Hospital have been doing a phenomenal job. So in the second half of our program, he's going to be with us answering a lot of questions that I have and many of you have based on your emails. By the way, if you wish to reach me by email, either live or on the show or during the week, it's info@alessimd.com. I always enjoy getting those emails. You're hearing a lot about the new vaccine and the new booster, basically, that's coming out. It's a bivalent, meaning it will affect two different strains of COVID-19 going forward. And to be very frank, I'm getting mine next week. I'm on target to get that, and I look forward to getting it because I think that we need to keep up with it. Is it going to be like the flu and getting it every year? Probably. But it really builds on what we've had already, the basis of our vaccination. Right now in Connecticut, our positivity rate is 9.8%. Now, again, that's based on PCR tests or NAAT tests, not home tests. But I can tell you we're seeing more and more of it because children have gone back to school last week. And children are not wearing masks, and many children have not been vaccinated. And it's that lack of vaccine penetration in a population that causes it to spread, so that other children who are vaccinated are getting it because it's a different variant. So we have to keep out in front of this, and we have to encourage our friends and family members to get vaccinated. Now, one of the questions that keeps coming up for me and people present is, what's the difference between fully vaccinated and up to date? So the definition of fully vaccinated is someone who has gotten the initial two mRNA vaccines, either Moderna or Pfizer, or the J&J vaccine. Actually, the J&J vaccine does have a booster. So to be fully vaccinated, there is a booster, either the J&J booster or an mRNA vaccination. Up to date means that you have not only gotten the two basic shots that you would have gotten, but also the boosters that follow. And that's important because it builds upon it. But the most important thing is to get that initial vaccination. So with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as you remember, it was going to be a one-dose vaccine. And that was considered fully vaccinated. But now it appears that that second vaccine really is what brings people up to date with the J&J vaccine. Since we're on the topic of vaccination, We've been following the story about polio in New York and this return, this resurgence of polio. And when I mean the resurgence, we have one case reported in Rockland County, but we are seeing more and more of the virus in wastewater. And that's something that really we came to know during COVID-19, is that you can monitor the existence of a virus in a population by monitoring and testing the wastewater. So what we have now in New York is polio in the wastewater of four different counties. So initially it was Rockland County, but now it's also Sullivan County, Orange County, and for the first time in Long Island in Nassau County. So we are starting to see things that we thought were gone back again. And I don't have to remind many of our listeners who are old enough to remember what paralytic polio looks like when it attacks a young person. So we need to be mindful, again, to encourage people to get vaccinated. And again, polio was essentially wiped out. We hadn't been seeing cases in this country. But now with this movement against vaccines, with disinformation about, not even misinformation, just disinformation about autism and vaccines, has really caused illness to many, many people and many children. It's just sad from that standpoint. Well, one other quick thing. As many of you know, I've been a real advocate for organ transplantation. And this week we noted that the first time we've reached 1 million organ transplants in the United States. And that is since the first organ transplant, which was a kidney transplant in 1954. And, you know, it had stalled for a long period of time. As much as it was successful in 1954, there was really a lag. And it's taken us a long time to get to 1 million transplants. I think that we will hopefully start to see a change in the mentality and approach to organ donors and having organ donors be more mindful of how much they can keep other people alive by becoming an organ donor after their passing. And I have been a huge advocate of that. I think we may get the folks back on from Donate Life at some point to talk about how we're doing with that. You know, here you elect on your license whether you want to be a donor, an organ donor. In Europe, you are considered an organ donor automatically unless you opt out. Unless you specifically say, I don't want to be an organ donor, you are an organ donor. So it's an interesting mindset and a different approach to having organs available for folks. This day in medicine, September 10th, 1876, Dr. Franz Schwastik was an Austrian surgeon, and he reported the sign, came to be known as the Schwastik sign, of unilateral facial irritability, and it was a sign of spasm or tetany. So if someone had tetanus, you would tap on the face, and you would see this spasm. I can tell you, I've only seen one patient ever with tetanus, and that was during the earthquake in Haiti, and it's quite sad. But the Schwastik sign, something many physicians and medical personnel learn in school, was from his reporting in 1876. We're going to take a short break. Then we're going to be back, and we're going to talk a little bit about some hints I have for you about air travel safety around infections. And we're going to talk a little bit about an interview I did on Headline News this past week. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and I like to share with all of you when I learn something new about medicine and things in our existence. And this is air travel. We've talked about this before, but air travel, is it safe to get on an airplane in the face of COVID-19? And what should you do in order to travel safely? Because you know some people on that plane have COVID. Just assume that, right? I mean, that's the case. We know 9.8, almost 10% of people. So that's 10 out of every 100 people have COVID. That's just the way this works. And we think that's a low number. But let's go back. So I heard an interview with an infectious disease specialist from Boston who his job, his research is looking at air travel from an infectious disease standpoint. And what he talked about was fascinating. They did studies to find out where are the choke points. These are the points in your air travel where you are most likely to develop an infectious disease. Not just COVID. I mean, it could be tuberculosis. It could be any number of illnesses that are airborne particularly. And the two biggest choke points, the first one is at the security check-in. You're in that long line. Make sure you're wearing a mask. So again, you've got to take precautions. So it's at that security check-in is the first choke point where you're likely to be infected. Now, the second one I found to be very interesting because we hear a lot about air filtration on an airplane, how it's better than an operating room, it's great filtration, the air is clean, it's heated up by the engine. We've heard it. And the reason it's so good is because many of the air filtration systems on an airplane were designed when people smoked on an airplane. Now, I remember those days. And what you didn't want was a whole cabin filled with cigarette smoke. So they had to design systems of filtration that worked very well. The key to these filtration systems, and he brings this up clearly, is they have to be properly maintained. They take a lot of maintenance to do the job they're supposed to do. I don't know about you folks, but I don't know that there's a lot of maintenance going on. Okay, everybody keeps saying how they're cutting back, there's fewer people. So even if we assume that the air is absolutely clear, and it's safe to you to sit there without a mask on, which I don't adhere to, the safest place for you to be is in your seat with a blower going on. That little ventilation blower, you don't have to turn it on high, but you want the air to be circulating around you. So here's the next choke point, right, where you're likely to get COVID, the flu, or some other illness. That is when the plane lands and you're taxiing to the gate. You get to the gate and suddenly the power gets turned off because they're switching over to the auxiliary system. So there's several minutes there where there is no air filtration. What happens at that point? Everybody stands up, right? You get 200 people standing up as if the door was open and they were going to be able to rush out. Everybody stands up, crowds together, and there's no air filtration going on. So don't stand up and make sure you're wearing a mask because that's where it is. I learned a lot by this. The other thing he brought out was always have hand sanitizer with you and use it a lot. If you go to the bathroom, first of all, if you get up out of your seat, as soon as you get up out of your seat, make sure your mask is on. If you're walking down the aisle, because that filtration system is not that effective. But when you go to the bathroom, even if you wash your hands with soap and water, that water is not necessarily great. And that's not been necessarily filtered with a lot of bacteria. So always use the hand sanitizer when you finish washing your hands. And whenever you do anything, like even if you touch, you try to get something out of the rack above, use the hand sanitizer. Use it as much as you can. As many of you know, I actually wipe the seat down with a Purell or some other cleanser before I sit down to make sure I get the tray table in front and the seat belt clean. So those are some helpful hints, I think, if you're traveling to really have in mind, COVID or not. I mean, we're still dealing with flu and other infectious diseases. I also wanted to talk about an interview I did this week with Headline News. And this is about Julie Chin. Many of you have heard about her. She is the news anchor in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who had a stroke or had an impending stroke while on the air. She developed an aphasia, which is an impaired ability to use or understand language. So she couldn't pronounce words, and she was tripping over her words so much. So she kicked it over to her meteorologist, who had the foresight to call 911. And in doing so, got her to the hospital. She's a young woman. And something to bear in mind is 38% of strokes occur in people under the age of 65. Even though we see them mostly in older people, it's important to be aware of these things. Her good fortune was that it cleared. She went to a hospital and was treated. We don't know how she was treated. But she had several of the signs of stroke. And I want to review those. Those being, we try to remember things by B fast, right? B, the letter B for balance. E, eyes. And she had reported she was losing vision and had blurred vision in either one or both eyes. Face, if side of your face becomes crooked or asymmetric when you try to smile, it doesn't move. The A is for arms. If you put your arms out and you can't keep them up, or especially if one arm falls. Speech, much like she exhibited, where she was tripping over her own speech. And the final one, the T, is for time. What we say in neurology is time is brain. You could be losing up to 2 million nerve cells every minute that you're having a stroke. 2 million brain cells. So with that, you want to keep all of those things in mind if you're having a stroke or you're having these symptoms. The key thing is get to a hospital. Don't make the mistake of, well, let me see if it's going to get better. Let's see if it'll pass. Or something of that nature. Don't lose time, because that is absolutely crucial to staying healthy. And always bear in mind the modifiable risk factors that we talked about in a recent show with Dr. Alberts. Obesity, diabetes, hypertension, smoking. These are modifiable, controllable risk factors that we need to stay on top of to stay healthy. We're going to take a short break now, and then we're going to be back with my guest, Dr. Saeed Hussain, the Chief Clinical Officer of Trinity Health of New England. And we're going to be talking about COVID and what it's going to be looking like with this flu season coming up and the fall coming up, and what we can do to stay healthy. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Download the free Odyssey app and like WTIC today. Then listen anywhere, anytime.
We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it's great to have as our guest today Dr. Saeed Hussain. Dr. Hussain is the Chief Clinical Officer for Trinity Health of New England, and he is a regional leader throughout this whole COVID-19 pandemic. Saeed, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Alessi. Honored to be back.
So let's talk a little bit about the past. We'll start with the past. The COVID response overall in Connecticut. What do you think? How did we do? What could we have done better? What did we do best in dealing with COVID so far?
So I think looking back, I think there was a great degree of collaboration between the governor's office, the Department of Public Health, and indeed healthcare systems across the state. And that led to ultimately making sure we have the best outcomes possible, knowing fully well when we went into this pandemic, when it was declared in March 2020, we knew very little about this virus, but we've come a long way. And, you know, I point to that collaboration for getting us through some of the most difficult and challenging times. I can't think how we would have done this without the support we received. We had, at one point during our first surge, we had tents, we had additional capacity, we have the ability, along with, you know, not only at Trinity Health of New England, but other systems, to convert non-clinical spaces into clinical spaces if the need so arose to take care of COVID-19 patients. That led to the vaccination campaign that was very successful, very sustained, led to Connecticut being among the top five states very early on in terms of vaccination progress. So I look back at you know, things that we did. We ramped up testing, and, you know, proud of the response that we put together to serve our communities.
You know, I'm also proud of the way we dealt with it. And I resent the armchair quarterbacking going on now. You know, well, we should have done this. We shouldn't have closed schools. We shouldn't have done. And, you know, the coulda, shoulda, woulda is easy, but very difficult when people like yourselves are making public health decisions that are going to affect so many lives. So I'm glad you mentioned that about the cooperation, because I think I saw that across the board. And I think that's why we really limited the number of deaths in our state. So I'm glad you brought that up. Let's move on. So now going forward, we're getting into the fall, and we have children back in school, as I mentioned earlier in the program. Nobody's wearing a mask. Not a lot of children are vaccinated in the younger age groups. What are we heading in for, Saeed?
Yeah, so this is where I have a little bit of pause. And, you know, we continue, and we need to continue as healthcare leaders and public health officials to educate the public, to make them understand that the best tool in our arsenal against this virus continues to be vaccination. These vaccines are safe, effective. There are billions of doses worldwide that have now been administered for these COVID-19 vaccines, hundreds of millions of doses in our country alone, which points to how safe and effective they are. And for those that are still on the fence, it's important to realize that, yes, while we move towards a more endemic stage where we learn to coexist with this virus, it's still really not the flu, because a subset of individuals can develop long COVID symptoms. Again, the best way to go about this is to ensure that we get vaccinated. And if you are one of those individuals that may have an immunocompromised condition or live with someone who's elderly or has immunocompromising medical conditions, then there are other tools that can be used besides vaccination, which includes public health measures like masking and other things that we know work. So while we move away from the mandate and, you know, the strict guidelines around this, how we interact and how we behave with this virus, it's important to know there are tools for those individuals that are higher risk.
So let's talk about the new booster. What's different about it? Why do we need it? And how long is it going to protect us for?
Sure. Great question. So the new booster basically means that the vaccine is not only effective against the original strain of COVID-19, but also the newer subvariants of Omicron, BA4 and BA5. BA5 is the most dominant strain currently in the country. And so the vaccine, the booster, is redesigned to be active against both strains. And it's important as we head into fall that we learn from other countries. So one country that I would like to point out, which we historically look for clues as to how our flu season will pan out, is the Southern Hemisphere, Australia in particular. So Australia is now emerging from their winter season and arguably the worst flu season they've had in more than 5 years. They also had a concomitant increase in COVID-19 infections by more than 60%. So we can learn from this, what they've been through, and need to apply those lessons learned to us. And Australia did not have the advantage of this newly formulated booster, which we now have currently in our country. So we need to take advantage of that in addition to making sure we're prepared for the flu.
Let's get back on that, because I find, first of all, that's very interesting, especially about Australia, because they've done pretty well with COVID overall, as opposed to other countries. For them to be up 60%, Is it because of more air travel? Any other reason for it?
So as you may recall, during the initial year and a half of the pandemic, Australia had very, very strict rules. There was no travel in or out of the country, and much tighter rules than what we had in place here. And they had targeted lockdowns where entire cities or neighborhoods were locked down if there were cases that had bubbled up. So they really managed it very tightly. But then over the last several months, prior to their flu season starting in May, June, they actually relaxed most of these COVID-19 restrictions. They went away, which saw a really high bump up in cases, which was to be expected. And so they went into it with a slightly different trajectory than what we've been experiencing. Now, granted, we nationally now are around 80 to 90,000 infections daily, but our hospitals are not overwhelmed. Across the state in Connecticut, we have about 300 plus patients at any given time during the last several days and weeks that are admitted with COVID-19. But this is, you know, more manageable than what we went through in earlier surges.
You touched on something that is often a criticism of our statistics regarding people admitted with COVID-19. And, you know, people are out there saying, well, those numbers aren't true because sometimes people are admitted for something else and they just happen to have COVID-19. Is that true, or is that number, when we come up with people who are admitted for COVID-19, is COVID-19 the principal reason they've been admitted to the hospital?
That's a great point. It is actually the former. So it is, since we still have testing that we currently perform, there might be patients who come in with a medical condition that's not COVID-19 related, but may test positive. And we've seen that with these newer variants for COVID-19, which are able to dodge in some shape or form immunity. The vaccines, while highly effective against severe outcomes, there might be infections that may still happen, but the outcomes won't be as bad for those that are vaccinated, and we see that.
Let's move on. Paxlovid. It's become a little bit controversial. I mean, we know that it is effective in keeping people out of the hospital, in avoiding deaths and tragedies. But we've seen this Paxlovid rebound that keeps getting reported at 5 to 8% of people, but that's not been any of the practitioners' experience. So can you talk a little bit about Paxlovid? Should we be using it, not using it? Who should be using it?
Yeah, so if you're a high-risk individual who's come down with COVID-19, you have multiple medical comorbidities, you're above the age of 65, or you're on immunosuppressive medications, you should definitely have a discussion with your primary care doctor to see if you're eligible for Paxlovid. It does prevent severe outcomes per the study that was conducted. There have been reports about rebound following use of Paxlovid, and we've had some high-profile cases, Dr. Fauci, the president, for instance, but they've all had very mild symptoms or no symptoms, and they may just test positive. Ultimately, what I tell people is this is an effective drug. And if you look at the study results that Pfizer conducted, there was a subset of people who were on placebo that also had a rebound. But, you know, given, you know, the nature around this new drug, there's a lot of hype around the rebound effect. But ultimately, it does what it's intended to do, and that's prevent severe outcomes.
Can you reiterate for our guests, what are the new CDC guidelines regarding when to mask, what contacts need to do if you're around someone with COVID and
Absolutely.
Kind of going
the
forward?
The biggest change that the CDC now put in place is that dropping the quarantine requirement regardless of vaccination status. So if you're exposed, if you develop symptoms, obviously you get tested. If you don't, and if you've been exposed, you don't need to quarantine, but they do recommend testing at day 5. And if you're positive and your symptoms are improving, you're able to end isolation on day 5 and then wear a mask for the 10-day period. That's one of the biggest changes that came through. Along with making sure that I go back to the same premise that as we move into the endemic phase of this pandemic, which means the virus will always live with us, we have to adapt as well, right? So if you are someone who has a higher risk of developing severe COVID-19, there are tools that you can use, especially if there's higher community transmission. So there's community transmission low, medium, and high. If you're living in an area, in a county or a city or a town that has high community transmission, you're a higher risk individual, then what are the things that you can do? For instance, if you go to the gym or if you go to the mall or if you go to a shopping plaza indoors, especially indoor setting, it's crowded, you can wear a mask. You can choose to wear a mask in addition to being up to date with your vaccination. And that includes the new booster that just got approved. And making sure that you observe those public health measures to ensure that you're safe and your loved ones are safe.
Getting back to the new booster, it's everyone over, my understanding is everyone over the age of 12 is eligible. It's not just people over the age of 65 or those with chronic conditions. Is that correct?
That is correct. So anybody above the age of 12 is eligible for the Pfizer booster. Anybody above the age of 18 is eligible for the Moderna booster. No one booster is better than the other. So if whatever is available at your local pharmacy or doctor's office, you should get. The only caveat here is it needs to be at least 2 months after you've received your last COVID-19 vaccine dose, whether that was a booster or whether that was completion of the vaccination two-dose series for Moderna or Pfizer or one-dose series for Johnson & Johnson. It needs to be a two-month period.
And can you get the flu vaccine at the same time as you're getting the new COVID vaccination?
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's what we recommend, and that's what folks should get, because otherwise you may put it off, you may delay it, and we just have to be prepared. Again, looking at data from the Southern Hemisphere, Australian flu season usually starts in June. This year it started in April. So we need to be prepared that our flu season may start earlier based on how things panned out in Australia. Remember, we followed them. We followed suit over the last 2 years. Australia and the Southern Hemisphere had a very, very low to minimal flu season, historically low, and we basically had the same thing. So we just have to be prepared for that. So bottom line is, if you're getting your booster shot or if you're getting your flu shot, make sure you get both COVID-19 booster as well as the flu shot. You can get it on the same day.
You know, I don't think it's rocket science that the flu levels were lower when everybody was wearing masks indoors. I mean, it seems like it was a practical approach. And now that we're not, it's going to make a big difference. Am I correct in thinking that way? It's not that the flu's become more virulent.
Absolutely. And there's also an element of natural immunity because these viruses have really not been around as much. If you look at the demographics of people who were infected with flu in Australia, there was a large chunk of children below the age of 9 who were also testing positive for flu. So it's important that you keep your children in mind and talk to your pediatrician if your child will actually require 2 doses of the flu vaccine and not just one based on their age.
Say, one of the things you brought up with the CDC guidelines, I hate to skip around, but I wanted to go back to it, is if you test positive, I want to make sure we're clear. If someone tests positive, has symptoms, and so they quarantine for 5 days. At the end of those 5 days, they're feeling better, but still testing positive. Do they have to continue to quarantine, or can they go back out into the community?
You should isolate. So you have a negative test, and or you have symptoms that have resolved, and or you're not taking any fever-reducing medications for at least 24 hours.
Okay. So it's not 5 days and I'm liberated here. Is if you're having symptoms, still having fever, and need to take medication, you need to isolate for a longer period. Okay,
I think that's right.
So, in some ways, that doesn't get out there. And if you've had contact with someone you live with turns positive, okay, you don't have symptoms, you test negative day one, all right, you can go out into the community wearing a mask. Indoors and outdoors when you're wearing a mask, or just indoors for that contact until you test again?
You should probably wear a mask,
okay,
just to be on the safer side to ensure that you're not spreading anything.
Here's a tough one. If you had your crystal ball, where are we going with COVID? What's it going to look like in 2023, 2024? Where do you think?
So knowing how this virus has behaved, Dr. Alessi, I wouldn't be surprised if there are new variants that pop up. And ultimately, if we go towards a state where, like the seasonal flu vaccine, it's an annual vaccine. And we ultimately come to a stage where the COVID-19 vaccine will become an annual vaccine. And it will be the good thing about the technology, the messenger RNA technology that both Pfizer and Moderna utilize, is that we can, in a very short period of time, we can turn around a newly formulated vaccine that's active against the most dominant and virulent variant. I do believe, though, that this virus will stay around, and we will learn to coexist with it.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned already that the vaccine is safe, effective, available, and more importantly, free of charge to everyone. So really getting out there, it sounds like now is the time to not only get the COVID vaccine, but also get the flu vaccine. Or, you know, we're used to getting it middle of October, late October for flu. I think what you're telling us is to get it now.
Yes, absolutely. Now is the time to get both shots so we're ready and we can prevent a fall surge.
The pneumonia vaccine for people. Can they get that as well? Does that have to be a two-month wait? Do you know that? I'm not sure.
No, it's not a two-month wait. You can, if you're eligible for the pneumovax, then yes, you should talk to your primary care doctor and get that scheduled as well.
Great, great. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time, and thanks for everything you've done and continue to do with the folks over at Trinity Healthcare. As a community, we are very grateful for your efforts.
Thank you, Dr. Alessi. Much appreciated.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to be back with some other points to discuss with everybody during this season. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi. In closing today, I had some email regarding the possibility of a new way of avoiding all of COVID. And through some research done in Israel, you'll be reading about it in the paper, and it's been around. Can the use of these antibodies avoid all of the different COVID strains? I think it's yet to be determined. That research is very early, hasn't been tried on any large-scale study. So I wanted to make sure everyone was aware of that. If you are having questions, just get them over to me at info@alessimd.com. In closing today, I would be remiss to not mention that this is the 21st anniversary of the tragedy on September 11th, 2021. In which time so many Americans going about their normal day lost their lives. And it's important for us to remember that, to remember that these were hardworking Americans and that we were attacked. And we need to always be wary of that and look out for each other and be kind to each other and share information that we think is helpful. And maybe get rid of some of the political divisiveness in this country going on right now and looking out for each other's health and safety. I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Hussein, who's been on and has really been a huge help to us on the program and getting good information out to everyone. Many thanks to our studio producer today. Kevin Kors has been on the board along with Joey Burgoyne. Jeff Chandler's in charge of sales and marketing for Healthy Rounds. Next week on Healthy Rounds, we're going to have another live program with more information. There are a lot of things we want to talk about. Now the children are back in school, I want to talk about children and getting the proper amount of sleep. And also, a term we've been hearing about in the paper, the quiet quitting. And how does that relate to people's health? As always, I'll be taking your questions at info@alessimd.com. If you missed any part of today's program, you can get the Healthy Rounds podcast from Audacy.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Next up on WTIC is Law Talk with attorney John Matulis. I will be on the sideline this evening at the UConn game, and we are playing Syracuse. So if you're out there and we have an opportunity, come by and say hello. Until next week, this is Dr. Anthony Alessi. Please stay healthy.
This has been Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi. Sponsored by St. Francis Hospital, Rochford Eye Center, Hartford Healthcare, MD Advantage, and UConn Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Be sure to tune in next Saturday morning at 11 for more Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.